This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Humble Pie. Humble Pie. Serve yourself up a nice big slice. Once you try it, it's a lot better than you think it'll be. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is called The Secret Garden Was Right About Robins. Other than Anne of Green Gables, The Secret Garden by Frances Hodgson Burnett is the book I've read the most times. It's a story that has something to offer to me no matter how many times I read it. I'm always renewed by its hopeful message of the healing power of nature. Being American, I was enthralled by the scenes of far-off places with drastically different climates, plants, and animals from what I grew up with. Being from California, I understood the early chapters, which were set in India, because it talked about the weather being hot, and it even mentions a snake. As a child, I saw snakes all the time, and as in India, some were dangerous, and some weren't. But most of the book takes place in exotic Yorkshire, with lush green moors covered in heather and weird, depressed rich people who have giant crumbling mansions that they never actually live in. In California, we also have rich, weird people, but they live in their mansions, which are always in great condition, and they deal with their depression by buying silly cars and getting acupuncture. Truly great literature will continue to surprise you no matter how much you think you have it figured out. And this recently happened to me. Because for my entire life, I had assumed that the character of the robin in The Secret Garden was given exaggerated, human-like characteristics just because it helped the plot along. I never dreamed that real-life robins were actually that much like the cheeky little bird from the book. My assumptions were completely wrong. British listeners, go ahead and break out the popcorn and prepare for a nice smug moment of head-shaking about the silly, ignorant American who's only just now learning a thing or two about Britain's most beloved bird. But all you other listeners, I hope you're as pleasantly surprised as I was to discover that Frances Hodgson Burnett didn't bend the character of robins to serve her plot. She built the entire story around the natural behaviors of the British robin. One thing I've always known is that American robins are not the same thing as British robins. They aren't really robins at all. They're a member of the thrush family. Americans of every state but Hawaii will be familiar with the American robin, which is the most common bird in the country. But they're not very friendly, and they have very little in common with the European robin, other than eating bugs and fruit. They have got red tummies, though. So when European colonists arrived in America a few hundred years ago, they saw the coloration and thought, oh, it must be a robin as well. Fair enough. As this was way before anybody knew about DNA or how to use it to figure out animal taxonomies. The same thing happened with other American species when Europeans arrived and gave them names. The newcomers would see a creature that reminded them of something from back home because of the striping or colors. But I have to say that the British versions of these animals definitely tend to be cuter than their American counterparts. The American critters evolved in a harsher environment with tougher predators. For example, what Americans call a badger is a vicious, mangy fang beast that makes a bobcat with rabies look friendly. If you think I'm exaggerating, let me just say that they eat rattlesnakes for breakfast. British badgers, on the other hand, are sleek, adorable critters with very dapper stripes. They're shy of people and get grumpy if you try to go into their homes, much like the British themselves. They eat earthworms and bumblebees, and I choose to believe that they have very fine sets of Denby china for their tea parties, during which they wear monocles and waistcoats with gold pocket watches on chains. I've been lucky enough to spend plenty of time in the Great British outdoors, observing all of the adorable, fluffy, rabies-free glory of its wildlife, and robins have become my favorite. This bird is particularly beloved by the British. And it's a common symbol at Christmas time because, unlike most birds, which fly off to the Mediterranean or even Africa for the winter, most British robins stick around, bringing a much-needed splash of cheerful color and song to what is a drab and gray time of year. I've lived in the Midlands of England for 2 years now, so I've gotten to learn how to garden here. The climate is mild, rarely getting below freezing, and the summers tend to be pleasant and warm, with enough random rain showers to keep everything lush and green. The house I live in was built on land that used to be community gardens, or allotments as they're called here. So the soil in my yard is rich and dark and so soft I could dig into it with a teaspoon. As an avid gardener, I hit the jackpot. But there was one more bonus I didn't expect. Purely by accident, I've had the same experience as the main character from The Secret Garden did by making friends with a robin in my garden. In The Secret Garden, a neglected girl, Mary Lennox, is sent to live with her uncle in Yorkshire after her parents die in colonial India. Mary does not begin the book with many redeeming qualities. She had never received proper love or discipline, and the adjective sour is used to describe her often. She hates everyone, and everyone hates her. And then one of the most touching scenes in the book happens when she encounters a robin on the grounds of her uncle's estate. In chapter 4, an entirely new feeling comes over Mary. She could see the tops of the trees above the wall, and when she stood still, she saw a bird with a bright red breast sitting on the topmost branch of one of them. And suddenly he burst into his winter song, almost as if he had caught sight of her and was calling to her. She stopped and listened to him, and somehow his cheerful, friendly little whistle gave her a pleased feeling. Even a disagreeable little girl may be lonely, and the big closed house and big bare moor and big bare gardens had made this one feel as if there was no one left in the world but herself. If she had been an affectionate child who had been used to being loved, she would have broken her heart. But even though she was Mistress Mary, quite contrary, she was desolate, and the bright-breasted little bird brought a look into her sour little face, which was almost a smile. She listened to him until he flew away. The rest of the chapter is a discussion between Mary and the gardener, Ben Weatherstaff, about the robin. Mary wants to know how to get into a mysterious walled garden with a locked door, and she tries 3 times to get Ben to talk to her. He rebuffs her, until she mentions seeing a bird with a red breast. Then grumpy old Ben Weatherstaff smiles and becomes downright chatty. Mary is amazed by the sudden change, and she begins to discover a transformation in herself as well. Ben whistles for the robin, which arrives promptly.
"Here he is," chuckled the old man, and then he spoke to the bird as if he were speaking to a child. "Where hast thou been, thou cheeky little beggar?" he said. "I've not seen thee before today. Hast thou begun thy courting this early into season? Thou'rt too forward."
The bird put his tiny head on one side and looked up at him with his soft, bright eye, which was like a black dewdrop. He seemed quite familiar and not the least afraid. He hopped about and pecked the earth briskly, looking for seeds and insects. It actually gave Mary a queer feeling in her heart, because he was so pretty and cheerful and seemed so like a person. He had a tiny, plump body and a delicate beak, and slender, delicate legs.
"What kind of bird is he?" Mary asked.
"Doesn't thou know? He's a robin redbreast, and they're the friendliest, curiousest birds alive. They're almost as friendly as dogs, if you know how to get on with them. Watch him pecking about there and looking round at us now and again. He knows we're talking about him."
It was the queerest thing in the world to see the old fellow. He looked at the plump little scarlet waistcoated bird as if he were both proud and fond of him.
"He's a conceited one," he chuckled. "He likes to hear folk talking about him. And curious, bless me, there was never his like for curiosity in meddling. He's always coming to see what I'm planting. He knows all the things Master Craven never troubles hisself to find out. He's the head gardener, he is."
The robin hopped about, busily pecking the soil,
and now and then stopped and looked at them a little. Mary thought his black dewdrop eyes gazed at her with great curiosity. It really seemed as if he were finding out all about her. The queer feeling in her heart increased. As until quite recently, I had little experience with British robins, it was easy for me to see this scene purely from a story standpoint. In The Secret Garden, the unhappy characters in the book are healed when they become more deeply connected to nature. Ben admits that the robin is the only friend he's got. This causes Mary to admit that she hasn't got any friends at all. But this changes in just a moment when the robin sings out and Ben declares, "He's made up his mind to make friends with thee." So Ben is friends with the robin, and now Mary is friends with the robin, and after admitting how much they have in common, it would seem that the grouchy old man and the grouchier young girl have taken a first step toward becoming friends themselves. It's an important character moment, but as it turns out, the passage is also describing what robins are really like. Out in my front yard, there used to be a few grass strips along the flower borders. I'd say grass, but that's a bit generous, as it was at least half weeds, many of them invasive. I had a project to pull up this useless turf and replace it with a self-regenerating combination of seasonal bulb flowers and annual wildflowers. I'm not even finished, and it's already so much better. There's color everywhere, and it's nice to see how many pollinators have already discovered the new habitat. But my first garden visitor arrived before I'd even planted anything. Lawns are loaded with grubs that eat the roots of grass. These little larvae overwinter under the soil and then come out when it's warm enough to chomp on your lawn and make it look bad. As I dug up these plump little lawn pirates, I would toss them onto the driveway. I planned to sweep them up and throw them out when I was done. But I didn't have to. As I was working, I noticed that a round, fluffy little ball of brown and scarlet was perched on the far side of the shed, leaning its head over to peek at me with cautious interest. I looked up at it, and suddenly was reminded of the moment in Chapter 5 of The Secret Garden, where Mary goes skipping along after the robin, calling out, "I like you! I like you!" I was feeling a bit silly and whimsical, so I looked up and called out softly to the bird, "Hello, pretty robin." That did it. The robin was immediately scared off, but I didn't feel discouraged. I was careful to throw the grubs into roughly the same spot, and soon enough the robin was back, perched at a safe distance, but clearly still interested in my work. When I cleaned up and went inside, I ran to watch through a window, and within a minute, that robin was right down there on the driveway, pigging out on grubs as he flitted back and forth from the taller shrubs at the back of the border. That evening, I flipped through my copy of The Secret Garden and reread the part where Mary talks to Ben about the robin. She asks if it's possible for the bird to remember who she is.
"Remembers thee," says Weatherstaff indignantly. "He knows every cabbage stump in the gardens, let alone to people."
This made me wonder if that were actually true. So I did a little research, and I was astonished by what I learned. Many bird guides say that British robins average a lifespan of only a few years, but this is because most of them die very young. If they make it past their first year, they could live to be nearly 20 years old. They have incredibly good memories, and they're very territorial. Robins would indeed know every cabbage stump in their territory. Ben Weatherstaff's robin was born inside the secret garden, and he continues to build his nest there and raise chicks every year. This is quite normal behavior, and the little robin would certainly know not only Ben, but every human in his territory. His careful assessment of Mary was quite similar to the way my robin had started scoping me out. The next day I had more work to do and it wasn't raining, so I went back out to the same spot out front and, sure enough, the robin showed up and started watching me. I did just as before, digging up chunks of grass, shaking the soil loose, and sifting out big rocks and picking out grubs. This time, I had better luck. The robin actually flitted down and landed while I was working. He never got closer than 10 feet from me, and I tried to be respectful by tossing the grubs well away from myself so he could see that I wasn't going to force the friendship. As I worked, I watched the little bird, and it was exactly the way the robin was in Chapter 4. She chirped and talked and coaxed, and he hopped and flirted his tail and twittered. It was as if he were talking. His red waistcoat was like satin, and he puffed his tiny breast out and was so fine and so grand and so pretty that it was really as if he were showing her how important and like a human person a robin could be. I've kept talking to the little bird whenever I see it, and it seems to be getting the idea that I might be someone worth its attention. The reason robins and gardeners were always destined to be friends is that robins are crazy about the worms and bugs that live in the soil. Gardeners are constantly digging around, pulling up unwanted pests. The robins are happy to gobble them up for us, and in return, we humans get to enjoy seeing the pretty little birds and hear their pleasant song. Gardeners can build strong, lasting relationships with their robins, like the one Ben Weatherstaff has with his, because the birds stay so close to home and can live fairly long lives. Some gardeners even build enough trust that the birds will take food right from their hands. This extra food is incredibly important during nesting, and hungry babies are much more likely to survive if both parents are able to rely on a gardener's help, both in the form of digging up bugs and hanging up bird feeders. Male and female robins are good parents, so much so that sometimes they're even observed feeding the babies of other species. All the extra help they can get is very welcome. I'm hoping to continue building a relationship with my robin, who I've decided to call Ben. The moment I'm really waiting for, though, is this one from Chapter 4 of The Secret Garden. Suddenly, a clear, rippling little sound broke out near her, and she turned round. She was standing a few feet from a young apple tree, and the robin had flown onto one of its branches and had burst into a scrap of song. Ben Weatherstaff laughed outright.
"What did he do that for?" asked Mary.
"He's made up his mind to make friends with thee," replied Ben. "Dang me if he hasn't took a fancy to thee."
"To me?" said Mary, and she moved toward the little tree softly and looked up.
"Would you make friends with me?"
she said to the robin, just as if she was speaking to a person.
"Would you?"
You and your kids can learn about the biology and behaviors of the British robin while you read The Secret Garden. On the show notes for this episode at childrensliteraturepodcast.com, I've left a worksheet that you can print out that helps kids discover just how accurate Frances Hodgson Burnett's depiction of the robin really is. The only fictional part of the character is that it seems to intentionally show Mary where the key and the door to the secret garden are. But other than that, every word in the book about this cheeky, charming little bird is completely true. I will keep you up to date on my efforts to become Ben's friend. For now, he seems to be very interested in the free food he's getting, and that's a good start. I hope that one day soon, just like Mary Lennox, I'll have a robin twittering and chirping and hopping along with me as I work in my own not-so-secret garden. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.